New York City wants to get the fat out of your diet, or more specifically, the trans fat. The city health department is proposing that restaurants drastically reduce the amount of trans fats in the foods they serve. The reason for this shift is that a diet high in trans fats is associated with heart disease, and possibly other ailments as well. In this hour, we'll talk about the evidence for the dangers trans fats pose. We'll also talk about whether requiring restaurants to cut back on trans fats will have the desired effect on the health of New Yorkers and others who visit the Big Apple. And we'd like to have your thoughts on the subject, so give us a call. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. And if you want more information about what we'll be talking about this hour, go to our website at www.sciencefriday.com. Now, let me introduce my first guests. Dariush Musafarian is a cardiologist and instructor at the Harvard Medical School and Harvard School of Public Health. He's written a review article that was recently published in the New England Journal of Medicine's about trans fats and heart disease. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Musafarian.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And also here with me in Studio 3A is Sheila Cohen-Weiss. She's a registered dietitian and director of nutrition policy at the National Restaurant Association. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, so maybe Dr. Musafarian, we can start with you, and let's get some definitions going here to begin with. What is a trans fat?
Well, the word trans refers to the type of double bond it has. All fatty acids that are not saturated have double bonds, and trans is a certain kind of double bond that's generally not present in nature. Mammals don't make trans bonds, for example, and very small amounts are present naturally in some foods, but the type of bond is really only seen in foods that are produced or prepared with partially hydrogenated vegetable oils.
Yeah. You know, I want to go a little further. I don't mean to make this into a whole big definition thing, but what does it mean? I guess everybody's heard this, you know, saturated fats and polyunsaturated fats, but what does that mean, a saturated fat?
Well, so all fats are strings of carbon molecules connected by bonds, and if they're are hydrogens on those carbons, and there's no double bonds, then the type of fatty acid is called saturated.
Mm-hmm.
If there's double bonds between the carbons, so they have fewer hydrogens, then they become unsaturated. And if there's just one unsaturated bond, it's a monounsaturated fat, such as seen in olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
And if it has multiple double bonds, it's a polyunsaturated fat, such as found in vegetable oils. And the trans refers to the orientation of those hydrogen bonds, of those hydrogen molecules, excuse me, around the double bond. If they're on the same side of the double bond, it becomes trans. And what that does is it alters the physical properties of the fatty acid. And, you know, that's in fact, in some ways, why this was developed in the first place, because you can take an oil that's liquid at room temperature, like soybean oil or safflower oil, and you can partially hydrogenate it, add these trans bonds, and you make it solid or semi-solid at room temperature. So you're actually altering the chemical properties of the fatty acid by altering the type of bond it has.
Got it. And I'm going to take a stab from my organic chemistry, which I'm sure has changed enormously since I learned it. But anyway, bonds are what attach the carbon molecules to each other and what how the hydrogen attaches to the carbon. But the carbon has this unique property that it can have not just one bond, but two bonds connecting the same two carbons. Did I do that
correct?
Right?
Yes.
Yes!
Correct.
All right. Through the uprights. Thank you very much. Okay, so then the question is, why would a trans fat be worse from you than a cis fat or a polyunsaturated fat?
Well, those are two different questions.
Okay.
So, you know, sort of the why and what the evidence is. You know,
okay.
The why, I think, is very interesting, and you know, what makes nutritional study of nutrition so interesting. You know, traditionally, a person might think of fats as just a carrier of calories. You know, that's what I eat, it has calories, it gets into my fat cells. But really, fats are what make us multicellular. If we didn't have fat, we wouldn't have cells, because all of the cells, the membranes of the cells, are mostly fat molecules. And so the way the cells of our body interact with each other is determined by the composition of that membrane. And so different fatty acids in the membrane alter the way the different cells function and communicate with each other. And so, you know, when you eat trans fats, it gets taken up into your membranes, of all the membranes of the body, and has different effects on different cells and different organ systems.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let me turn to Sheila Cohen-Weiss here in the studio. First of all, as someone who's interested in nutrition, I mean, do we need trans fats, or are they just a modern convenience that turns out to be not so good for us?
Well, it all started in the early 70s and 80s when scientific research and consumer demand pushed our industry and the food industry away from saturated fats. And we started to use partially hydrogenated oils, which obviously contain trans fats, to use as a substitute. And they have shown to have longer shelf life, provide crispiness to food products, and provide a desirable mouth feel. As we all know, and as was just discussed, recent research shows over the last several years that trans fats, along with saturated fats and dietary cholesterol, do contribute to coronary heart disease. And that is the reason why, over the last several years, our industry has been making great strides to move away from oils containing trans fats in order to find other alternatives.
But is it just convenience or is it price? Is there a reason not to just say, oh, well, let's get rid of them altogether if they're not good for you?
Well, moving away from trans fats has proven to be a challenge for our industry. There are many reasons for that. One of the main reasons is that of supply. Mm-hmm. There currently is not enough supply for all of our nation's restaurants to move away from partially hydrogenated vegetable oils. In addition, it takes a great deal of testing. A lot of restaurants have moved away and have made great strides, but in doing so, it's taken them upwards of 2 years to find the appropriate substitute, one that provides adequate shelf life, that will maintain the taste and quality of the foods that were prepared before with trans fat oil.
Okay. Well, let's see if we can get our listeners to come in on this conversation. And let's go first to Louise in Paradise, California. Louise, welcome to the program.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I have eaten, I'm a person who has eaten a lot of trans fat in the form of Crisco and margarine and baked goods all my life.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that I discovered about 5 years ago, when I developed very severe colon problems, was that I was led to research this subject a lot and discovered that it not only accumulates the coronary arteries, as they've discovered, but it also is layering in the colon and known as bucoid plaque.
Huh. Well, Louise, let me see what Dr. Mozafarian has to say about that. Have you any evidence or have you seen any evidence that it's more than just the coronary arteries that are a problem from trans fats?
Well, you know, I think it's important, first of all, to not lump trans fats together with saturated fats or mm-hmm. dietary cholesterol, because the strength of the evidence and the size of the effect, calorie for calorie, there's really no comparison. Trans fats are pretty much an additive to foods, where, you know, saturated fats are naturally found in meats and dairy products.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of different conditions that are affected, there's very strong evidence for coronary heart disease. There's good evidence for sudden cardiac death, which is, you know, when someone sort of dies suddenly, keels over on the street. There's growing evidence for diabetes and maybe weight gain. I have not seen strong evidence for colon disease, but you know, as a cardiologist, that's not my main area of research. So there may have been some studies that I'm unaware of.
Yeah, but let me just ask you then: what was your? I know you testified at a hearing earlier this week about the New York City plans. What do you think they should do? What do you think their plans are good ones to reduce over the next 18 months? What restaurants are permitted to serve?
Well, you know, my testimony focused on the science, on the harmful effects, and the magnitude of the effect, but I think that, you know, the New York initiative is a very sensible initiative. They're giving time to the restaurants. They're, you know, allowing some small levels of trans fats. And You know, there's certainly enough supply in the world to supply New York City to make these changes. It's going to be invisible to the consumers. It's not going to increase cost or change taste. They're not banning any foods. It's just changing sort of the additives in the foods. And so I think as a matter of food safety, the policy makes sense.
What about you, Sheila Weiss? What does the National Restaurant Association feel about New York's plans?
Well, I also was testified on Monday at the public hearing in New York City. And I think to begin with, I mean, like I said, there are many, many aspects of the ban that we do not agree with. And what came up many times is that of supply. Now, the product, for example, and we've worked a lot with our industry partners on this. And to begin with, the New York City restaurant, the New York City ban takes a very, very narrow approach by looking at one item. And like I mentioned before, the issue of supply is one that we have faced. Many people have said that supply isn't a problem.
So this is supply as an alternative to what's being used today?
Okay. Yes, alternative oils. For example, many restaurants are looking to low linolenic soybean oil. And we have found that the production of low linolenic soybean oil in the United States for 2006 is estimated to be about 400 million pounds of oil. But one quick service restaurant alone in our country is estimated to use about 330 million pounds of oil each year.
So quick service is what the Restaurant Association refers to, what we most of think of as fast food restaurants?
Yes,
okay,
absolutely.
Good. All right. So there's just a problem there.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we're going to spend quite a bit of the next hour talking about that and what remedies there might be for that. So please, all listeners, stay with us. And we'd like to take your calls at 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. And we'll be back after a short break to talk more about trans fats and other kinds of fats. Stay with us. We're talking this hour about trans fats. And my guests are Dariush Mosafarian. He's a cardiologist at the Harvard Medical School and Harvard School of Public Health in Boston, and Sheila Cohen Weiss. She's a registered dietitian who is who's the director of nutrition policy at the National Restaurant Association. And let me introduce now my next guest. Gail Brewer is a member of the New York City Council. She represents District 6, which covers the Upper West Side and Lincoln Center. That's my old stomping grounds. I used to live around there. Welcome to Science Friday, Ms. Brewer.
Thank you very much.
So we've been talking about the Department of Health's plans to require restaurants to cut back on the amount of foods they serve containing trans fats. What do you think about this plan?
Well, I certainly have a lot of restaurants, as you suggest, in my district, and obviously we have thousands in New York City, but I think it's a good idea. I've certainly talked to some of the owners of restaurants on the West Side, and I think they do feel it is the wave of the future.
Mm-hmm.
However, we also have large and we have smaller ethnic restaurants, and we do need a little bit more time than the commissioner may have in mind, and a little bit more education in terms of some of the smaller restaurants. I know the commissioner of health in New York City hopes to vote on the proposal by the Board of Health December of 2006, and then within 6 months, July 2007, try to have the removal of some of these trans fats.
But
it's a short time period.
Sure, no, I understand. But you're convinced by the evidence that we've heard from Dr. Mosafarian and others that there is a need to do this.
I would agree. I mean, there are issues to work out. That's why challenges remain and education is needed. For instance, out-of-state foods, baked foods, will continue to be sold, and we all love New Jersey, but we want New York City products to be purchased.
Mm-hmm.
And, sometimes within the kosher community, bakeries, caterers, and so on, they're going to have to find alternatives that are parve because they need to be neutral, not to contain dairy products, as you probably know.
Sure.
So there are issues that need to be addressed.
Well, let me just ask you, this proposal only relates to restaurants, and it's nice that people can go out to restaurants, and I suppose a lot of food is served in restaurants, but certainly most people get the bulk of the food from what they buy in the grocery stores, and there's no limitations being placed on that. So are you missing a big opportunity to have an impact here, or is it just that you don't have jurisdiction to say no trans fats?
It's jurisdictional. The bodegas and the delis, for instance, as long as food is prepared where their revenue is less than 50%, and certainly farmers markets, which we love, they're both overseen by the New York State Department of Agriculture and Markets.
I see. Okay. Well, let's continue to hear what our listeners have to say, and we'd like to hear from you. Our number is 800-989-8255, and let's go to Robert in Rochester, New York. Robert, welcome to Science Friday.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, I was wondering, are there trans fats in the meat section of the stores? And I don't go out to restaurants that often, so I'm mainly concerned about the food that I buy. And a lot of them these days do have the trans fat nutritional amounts, if any.
Huh.
Either zero. I have a substitute butter. I don't think you'd call it margarine, but it has 1 gram percentage of daily serving.
Uh-huh.
Now, what is 1 gram of trans fat in terms of your total nutrition and its effect on your health?
Well, let me ask Dr. Mosafarian that. There's a table in your article talking about the amount of trans fats in food, and I guess 1 gram is kind of on the low end of the amounts that you would find in most food servings. Is that right?
Well, the first question: are there trans fats in the meat section? You know, most if a food doesn't contain partially hydrogenated oils, it'll contain very, very little or no trans fat. So it's really just foods that are made with partially hydrogenated oils. And, you know, in contrast to restaurants, when you go to the grocery store, you can look at the label and, you know, make a choice about different foods.
Mm-hmm.
1 gram per serving represents, let's put it this way. Risk is seen with trans fats at very, very low levels of intake. So even 3 or 4 grams per day might increase risk of heart disease. So, and that's very different from, you know, other nutrients. So 1 gram per serving of margarine, if you have a couple servings in the day and then you, you know, eat something else that might have it and you eat something else, it adds up very quickly. So since there are products that can be chosen that have no trans fats, I think it's prudent and it makes sense to, you know, go and find a different butter substitute that has zero rather than the one that has one.
Got it. Okay, let's take another call now from Brian in Jacksonville, Florida. Brian, welcome to Science Friday.
Hey, Joe. Friday's my favorite day. I love this show.
Great.
I think that the consumer should be able to make that choice. I grew up, my mother drilled into me, everything in moderation, nothing in excess. We should, if you want to put it on the menu, hey, this has trans fats in it. I look forward to going to a Chinese restaurant and loading up on bad food, but I only do it every 2 or 3 weeks. I think it's ridiculous that you're saying, that Gail is saying, oh, we should even sell this. Label it. Let the consumer decide. That's the only way it should be. Where do we draw the line? Too much sugar in my sweet tea? I live in the South. We put bacon grease in our turnip greens. It's delicious. I don't eat it every day.
I see.
Thank you.
Okay, well, maybe we should let Gail Brewer have a response to that. Why not just label things and tell people what they're in for and not dictate to them how they're supposed to be fed?
Well, I mean, I think what happens in New York is we had actually a very good experience with the no-smoking law where mm-hmm. people really understood it after it was passed. There was a lot of fuss before it was passed. And, you know, the people who are working in the restaurants feel better, and it hasn't turned out to be a big challenge in terms of street noise, people smoking outside.
Yeah.
It's very positive health-wise. And I think as a legislator and as the commissioner of health has said, we need to be thinking about public health. It is true. People in their homes can cook and use, you know, right now any one of these ingredients. And the fact of the matter is, though, restaurants, I think when you go, you're not sure spending time looking up on a board as to what the ingredients are. These restaurants are sometimes small. I don't know how accurate the boards could be kept. And I think that, you know, the least we can do is a city concerned about public health and people living longer and having healthier lives. It's also, to be honest with you, a situation where we have, you know, thousands of different wonderful ethnic restaurants. Mm-hmm. And it would be very difficult in language and space to list all the different ingredients. It's my opinion, having talked to restaurateurs today, owners of ethnic restaurants, that in many cases they have already gotten rid of trans fat. The consumer doesn't know, and the food is equally delicious.
All right. Gail Brewer, thanks very much for joining us today. Gail Brewer is a member of the New York City Council representing District 6.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And Dr. Mosafarian, you wanted to add something.
Yeah, I also wanted to respond to that. I think that, you know, it's not really a question of regulating what people eat or deciding what people can and can't eat. There's going to be no change in the food that a person eats. It's really a question of an additive to the foods. And I think the example that the New York Department of Public Health used, which is appropriate, is the example of lead in paint. Mm-hmm. You know, lead was added to paint. We saw it was a danger. You can take the lead out of paint and still have paint. And so, you know, it's a safety measure. You know, by the most conservative estimates, about 1,400 heart attack deaths each year in New York are due to trans fat. So that's over 100 New Yorkers killed per month. I think that, you know, if it can be removed without any effect on choice, on price, on taste, which the evidence suggests it can, then why should we have it in the food?
Well, I just want to turn to Sheila Cohen-Weiss. I mean, do you agree that this is needs to be mandated, or like the caller said, it's enough to let people know? I mean, would the restaurant industry be happy just informing people who cared enough to ask?
Well, I think first of all, I wanted to say I'm really glad that Councilman Brewer was part of this discussion to bring to light from New York City what is actually going on. And I think that we can agree that the outcome of the Board of Health and New York City, as well as the restaurant industry, seeks the same. We all want to move away from trans fat and oils. I'm not here to say that trans fats are healthy or to dispute those aspects of this discussion. I'm here to talk about what the restaurant industry is doing, as well as the challenges we face. Councilwoman Brewer, excuse me, brought up some really good points about how the restaurants in New York City need more time and need more education. A year ago, the New York City Department of Health says that they send out brochures to their city's restaurants. Well, when we talked to our members in New York City, very few of them had actually received anything from the Board of Health. And many of them were not contacted by inspectors or by members of the Board of Health to discuss this issue and to talk about how to seek alternatives. So I think taking a step and actually talking to the restaurant operators about how they can make this change is really important in this move.
Okay. Well, we've been talking about a family of fats that are pretty widely considered to be bad for you, and I'd like to introduce or welcome to the program someone with a good perspective or an interesting perspective on a whole other class of fats and whether maybe it's their absence rather than the presence of something else is part of the problem. So joining me now is Susan Allport. She's a science writer in New York City, or New York State, and her new book is The Queen of Fats, Why Omega-3s Were Removed from the Western Diet and What We Can Do to Replace Them. She joins us today from NPR's New York Bureau, and welcome to Science Friday. It says here Ms. Allport, but I can't think of her that way because Susie Allport and I went to college together once upon a time, so it's going to have to be Susie. I can't do anything about that. I'm sorry. Welcome,
Hi.
Susie.
Hi, Joe. Thanks so much for having me on.
Nice to talk to you.
Subject.
We haven't spoken in a long time.
I know.
But what about this? I mean, are we focusing our wrath in the wrong place?
I think so. I have such a different perspective on trans fats, and it's a perspective that connects the trans fat story to the much more important omega-3 story. And it's a perspective that we absolutely have to understand if this ban is actually going to improve the health of New Yorkers. Now, just backing up a little bit, trans fats, as we all know, are formed when vegetable oils are partially hydrogenated to make them more stable and solid. But what most people don't know is that this process selectively eliminates the omega-3s in these fats, turning them into trans fats as well as omega-6s. And that's a second family of fats that are also essential, but that compete with the omega-3s for enzymes in cell membranes. By the way, we have many more of these 6s in our diets and our tissues than we do trans fats. But the question is, and it's a question on which the health of New York and the rest of the nation turns, is it the presence of those trans fats in these partially hydrogenated oils that is causing our health problems, or the absence of the omega-3s? Only really well-controlled studies can distinguish between these two alternatives. Meanwhile, we already know of numerous mechanisms whereby a lack of omega-3s and an overabundance of 6s can lead to heart disease and other problems, including the fact that important cell messengers called prostaglandins are much less likely to cause inflammation and much less likely to cause blood clotting when they're made from omega-3s than when they're made from omega-6s. And we also know that adequate amounts of the longest omega-3, DHA, in heart muscle cells prevent those cells from developing abnormal rhythms or arrhythmia, which is one of the two causes, along with clotting or thrombosis, of cardiac death. DHA is also found, we now know, in especially high concentrations in all the tissues in our body with the highest activity or metabolic rate. Now, I'm not saying that trans fats are good, but they certainly don't lead to disease by all the very well-defined mechanisms that we know that a lack of omega-3s and an abundance of omega-6s leads to disease.
We're talking about fats this hour with Susie Allport. She's the author of a new book on omega-3s. Sorry to interrupt.
I gave you such a mouthful, Bo.
You were doing great. I have to stop you for a second and remind people what we're talking about. And I'm Joe Palca, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. All right. Now.
Okay. Can I just finish this?
Finish quickly, because I have to get a response soon.
Okay.
Go ahead.
But if the ban results in restaurants using oils that are even richer in omega-6s, as many of these restaurants are, then the health problems are only going to increase. And we'll be in even hotter water or oil, as the case may be.
All right. You got the joke. That's great.
Yeah,
all right.
Thanks.
So now let's turn quickly, turn to Dr. Mousafarian. Is this an area of something that you're familiar with, this whole notion of omega-3s and the balance between them and omega-6 acids?
Well, you know, omega-3s are actually another significant area of my research, and I've maybe done more on omega-3s than trans, so I know quite a bit about the omega-3 story. And first of all, I agree completely that the lack of omega-3s in the U.S. diet is a major risk factor for disease and is just as important, if not more important, than the trans fats. But a couple of things were sort of not exactly correct in what Susan said. First, they're sort of separate risk factors. So low omega-3s is a risk factor and high trans is a risk factor. And carefully controlled studies have controlled for both of those things, and they're independent, separate risk factors, whether you look at dietary intake or membrane levels. So it's really two separate problems. And she's also correct that partial hydrogenation destroys the omega-3s in, for example, soybean oil. And so getting rid of that hydrogenation would not only get rid of the trans but add to the omega-3s. So I agree that low omega-3s is a problem, but that doesn't change the issue related to trans fat.
Okay. Don't respond, Susan, because we're going to keep you on a little longer afterwards. But I will ask Sheila Weiss, because I know we're going to say goodbye to her in just a minute. Any thoughts about the omega-3 issue, or is that just that's the next set of hearings that you go to? You haven't really come up with the omega-3 issue yet. No. Okay.
No.
All right. Well, that's fine. I just figured I better give you a chance to say something. All right. Well, Dr. Mousafarian, I want to say thank you for that. I don't want to get into a debate here between, you know, the varying values of each, but we are going to go on for the rest of this hour and talk some more about where omega-3s, where the evidence for them came from. So what I'm saying is thank you very much for joining us and at least getting us started in the right direction on that discussion.
You're welcome. More omega-3s, less trans. I'm all for it.
There you go. Well, see, that we start from the right place. And I'd also like to thank Sheila Cohen-Weiss. She's a registered dietitian and director of nutrition policy with the National Restaurant Association. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
And let me just also add that Dr. Mousafarian is at the Harvard Medical School and Harvard School of Public Health. And Susie Allport, you stay put because we're going to talk about your book and where omega-3s came from.
Great.
So stay with us.